Welcome back to another episode of the Jacob Johnston Show. On this episode, I'm going to cover the things that I didn't get around to on Friday. Now, Friday, I was looking to keep the episode shorter than what it ended up being. And that was because it was my birthday and I wanted to be able to enjoy the day. Hey, it's one day out of the year where I'm supposed to be able to just relax and do the things that I find the most fun, the most enjoyable. Relax, watch a few movies without having to hit pause a dozen times because of the kids' interruption, and just enjoy the day. And I still wanted to produce an episode because I do enjoy doing the show, but I wanted to be able to relax. So I made this episode shorter than what it normally is. Of course, it was longer than I was planning on. And I just covered the examples of ideological subversion that is happening all around us at all times. But on this episode, I'm going to go ahead and cover the other things that are important to talk about and give you more detailed thoughts and analysis about what's going on, the myths that the left is pushing, and then be able to address it in a way that the Democrats are unable to, reasonable and rationally. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get into today's episode. So as you know, ever since Biden was installed into the White House, it has been one dumpster fire after another. And one of the biggest dumpster fires has been the crisis at our southern border. Yes, when Trump was in office and he was building the wall and making it very clear that if you come here illegally, you're just going to be sent back home. And that sent a clear message. Hey, why would you waste so much money, risk your life in order to get here if the end result was that you were just going to be sent back? And so illegal immigration was pretty much curbed. People were not even making the effort. It was at its lowest numbers than what we had seen in decades. And then, of course, Biden gets into office and with completely no sense whatsoever, decides to undo the policies that was curbing illegal immigration and decided to basically declare open borders. Yes, let's call it what it is. You can call it catch and release. You can call it anything that you want. It's open borders. And I get it. The Democrats are trying to say, these are asylees. These are people claiming asylum. No, they're not. These are people who know the con game when the Democrats are in office. You come here illegally. All you're doing is you're looking for a job in order to send the money back home. You know, you're just going to be working for a short time, 6 months, a year, whatever, because of the value of the U.S. dollar compared to their home currency. They come here. They work for a little bit. And then they go home and they enjoy a little bit of retirement when the money goes out or their money runs out. They come back up here, work for a little bit longer, and then they take some time. Now, a lot of them do eventually end up staying, and that is to send money back home. But because they want to enjoy American society, especially the young ones, where they know that if they can have a kid, then that kid means that they get to stay here in de facto amnesty pretty much indefinitely. And they get to enjoy a lifestyle that they don't get to enjoy back home. And hey, I'm not going to blame the illegal immigrants on this. Yes, they're the ones crossing the border. Yes, but think about this. If you lived in a crap hole and there was another country out there much better than your own saying, hey, we're going to do open borders. You come here. We're going to resettle you. We're going to give you a job and we're going to give you welfare and taxpayer subsidies to help you get on your feet. Who wouldn't take that offer? So I'm not blaming the illegal immigrants because they're just taking the offer that is on the table, the offer that is given by the Democrats, which is de facto amnesty just by crossing the border. Well, this also sends a message to the rest of the world saying, hey, the United States is open. And so that gets us into the first article for today, talking about how migrants from overseas are now flocking to our southern borders to enter the United States. So because we are not keeping our southern border under control, and we have declared open borders for anybody south of us, this is sending a message to the rest of the world that they don't have to try and apply to get to the United States legally. Instead, all they have to do is get a plane ticket to Mexico or anywhere else south of the border, and then make the trip up to our borders like everybody in Mexico and Central America and South America. Just come to our borders like everybody else. Present yourself after you cross the border. Let yourself be captured. Just say asylum, you know, that you are claiming asylum. And then you will be resettled into the United States and you get to enjoy American life and escape maybe the hellhole that you were in. And we know that this is what's going on. Now, the Democrats are trying to resettle them in Republican states. And we got to try and figure out why that is. What is going on with the Democrats that they're going off and basically declared open borders and are trying to secretly resettle these people in Republican states? Hey, why don't they resettle them in Democrat states? Well, there's a simple answer for that. One, they've been taking in so many illegal immigrants that there may just not be enough room in Democrat states. But I suspect something a little more nefarious than that. I suspect what the end goal here is amnesty. So they're bringing in all the illegal immigrants and they're resettling them into red states so that they are there when amnesty is passed, along with the pathway to citizenship, the voting rights. And therefore, they are basically replacing the voters in that state in the hopes of being able to turn the Republican state into a Democrat state. It's a situation in which the Democrats, taking a look at how much election fraud they have to engage in order to continue to get elected, is getting beyond the pale. So they need to devise a new plan, a new strategy, especially as Republicans are finally stepping up in at least a few areas and passing new voter integrity laws in order to stomp out the Democrats' fraudulent election actions. And the Democrats are going out there going, well, we're so bat crap crazy. We're so anti-American that the average American voter would just will not vote for us. And so what do? You replace the voters. And so we're at a situation whereby it's not the voters determining who the elected leaders are. It's the elected leaders going off and trying to determine who the voters are. And because they're not getting the votes that they want in order to get the authoritarian power that they so much crave, they declare open borders. They're resettling everybody in the states that just will not vote for them. And then they're going to pass to amnesty in order to flip it blue. Now, there are more articles that relate to what is going on and what the Democrats are trying to do. But before I get to those articles, let's go ahead and debunk a few myths. Myth number one, these are asylees. These are people claiming asylum. Well, they may be claiming asylum, but they do not meet the definition, the legal definition of asylees. Now, the Democrats are trying to expand that definition. Oh, these are economic asylees. Economic asylees, that's not what asylum is for. Just because the economy in your own country sucks does not mean that you are somehow under the definition of asylum seeker. You're not persecuted. You're not in threat for your life just because the economy sucks. All right. Now, yes, I get it. You may be thinking that, okay, well, if their economy sucks, maybe they're homeless and starving in the street. Okay, I get that. And under that situation, you might be able to try and say that, yes, their life is in danger, but their life is not in danger because of their race or their religion. They're not actually being persecuted against. They just have bad leadership. And no, it is not the United States' responsibility to subsidize horrible garbage decisions and policies of the rest of the world. We would not be able to actually afford to do that. Now, I always think about this when we talk about asylum seekers and people fleeing other countries because the leadership is authoritarian, they engage in bad policies, and all of that. And I go off and I think about our founding fathers here in the United States. And I just wonder, you know, how much different the world would be today if our founding fathers, rather than rising up against a horrible government, taxation without representation, the authoritarian king of the British crown, and instead of rising up and mobilizing and fighting our war for independence, if instead they looked towards other countries and tried to ask for asylum. I mean, could you imagine if that was the case? And then you start wondering about the importation and wondering if we are actually helping horrible authoritarians, helping bad government, helping horrible leftists inflicting pain on their population, allowing them to get away with mass corruption and just some of the most horrible, horrendous actions that you will ever see. And because as I go off and I say that, you may be wondering, what do you mean we're helping the authoritarian government? Well, just think about that. By basically trying to expand the definition of asylum to be anybody who wants to enter the United States for any reason, we're basically helping that power in their home country, the authoritarian, to retain power, to stay in power. to rule over and destroy the lives of the people who aren't able to get out of the country, who aren't able to afford to pay the coyotes, who aren't able to risk taking the trip to the United States. It's almost like we're just removing the middle class from these countries, those who may have the biggest incentive to mobilize and rise up and overthrow the authoritarian government. We're basically helping to remove any animosity, anybody who would have any ability to lead an uprising, overthrow the authoritarians, and implement a constitutional republic like what we have here in the United States. Or at the very least, our actions are basically trying to subsidize horrible economic policies, horrible leadership, even if it's not rooted in evil authoritarianism. Maybe it's just plain old corruption. Maybe it's just plain old incompetence. But that incompetence and that corruption is able to stay in power because we are, one, helping to remove anybody who may be disgruntled enough to do anything about it. Because, hey, why take the effort to mobilize, rise up, maybe risk your life if you can just flee to another country and leave everybody else on their own? You know, letting everybody who can't leave that country basically in a crap situation with absolutely no hope out. But we are subsidizing that as well, you know, and allowing them to come into the country illegally, get jobs, and send that money back home. We're basically using American dollars to help subsidize bad economic policy. You know, it's kind of like what we see even here in crony capitalism, how there are some businesses, some industries that are just unprofitable. No matter what, no matter how much you break it down, they're unprofitable. They only lose money. They have never earned a profit in the entire history of their business, but they're still in business. And the CEO or the founder of that company, they're extremely rich. Why? Because they're living off of taxpayer dollars with the government as their only client. So the government passes spending bills, allocates money towards, you know, certain industries or certain businesses, and then that money goes to the companies of their friends, families, and donors. Maybe it's something like solar panel. And then they get that money for government grants, and basically they can't make a profit even selling to government, so they're just getting funding allocated to them from legislation. And then what do? They use that money basically in large part for a salary, you know, especially for the CEO, and administrative costs. And then some of it does go into making the products in order to fulfill any contractual needs as far as receiving that money. But with the way they operate, they never make a profit. Maybe they even lose money each round, but they continue to get more and more funding. And we are subsidizing failed businesses, trying to keep them propped up. Because for the politicians, another reason why some of these businesses, even with government funding, never make a profit is because they turn around with a large portion of that money and give it back to the politicians in their campaign coffers or into political action committees. And so we're just subsidizing failed businesses with taxpayer money, throwing more and more money at it, and yet it never makes a profit. Why is that? That is completely insane. But we are doing the same thing with our immigration policy, doing the same thing, allowing people to come in, cross the border illegally, so that they can get jobs instead of American citizens, and subsidize the bad economic policies and the corruption or ineptitude of their political leaders. It's an insane situation. What can I say? And then, of course, there is myth number two. We have a labor shortage. Yes, we need these people crossing the border illegally in order to fill jobs because we can't find American citizens for those jobs. We're in a labor shortage. Really? A labor shortage? Let me try and break this down for you. If we have an unemployment rate above zero, which means we have people looking for jobs that can't find jobs, then by definition, we do not have a labor shortage. Now, some of them are going, well, it's just a labor shortage for a certain industry. Uh-huh. But yet, I guarantee you there are American citizens applying for those jobs. It's just a matter of wages. They don't want to pay the wages. See, illegal immigrants are a lot cheaper, and therefore, you know, it helps them to avoid raising prices. And so it's not that there's a labor shortage. It's just that illegal immigration is being used as a labor subsidy to help keep labor costs low. Now, you may be going off, well, in these certain industries that pay minimum wage, there is a labor shortage. Well, probably right now that could be true on a temporary basis, simply because of the government's actions and policies that are paying more people to stay home and out of the workforce than what they would make getting a job and working minimum wage. So, of course, that will create a temporary labor shortage, but the simple fix to that is to cut off the government money. That will fix that problem rather quickly. But let's dive right into this, because not all of the people crossing the border illegally are going off and picking minimum wage jobs. Right? And as we go through and we analyze minimum wage jobs, you know, this is the one thing that frustrates me most about the Republican Party, is they want their argument against raising the minimum wage is that, hey, that will artificially cause prices to increase. And therefore, after we raise the minimum wage, of course, they're setting a set amount for the entire country, which is ridiculous to begin with, because different areas of the country have different costs of living. But they're going to go off and say, by giving them a higher minimum wage, the employers are just going to raise their prices, which is true, by the way, are just going to raise their prices. And in the end, minimum wage will still be unlivable. But hold on here. I do believe that if somebody is working 40 hours a week, even on minimum wage, they should be able to be paid enough to be able to afford basic living, you know, that they should be able to afford to pay rent on a place to live. They should be able to afford groceries, clothing, transportation, and utilities, the very basic necessities at the minimum. All right, now let's take a look at minimum wage the way it is right now. And I know I'm going to get back to the illegal immigration here in just a moment, but this is kind of my going off on a tangent. The employees are getting the money anyway to meet their basic living standard. It's just the taxpayers making up the difference that the employers themselves are not covering. All right. So the employees are getting the money either way. So the argument here is who should actually be paying them? The businesses that employ them for 40 hours a week, a full-time job? Or we, the taxpayers? Because what has happened with minimum wage and with welfare is that the reason why some of these jobs are still at minimum wage is because they know they can get away with it because the government will make up the difference. So there is another situation in which government is subsidizing labor costs. And if you're one of those Republicans going off and talking about the free market and how raising the minimum wage interferes with the free market and will cause prices to rise, doesn't it also make just as much sense to say that if government is stepping in to subsidize the difference between what is minimum wage is paying and what the bare minimum is for the cost of living, that that itself is interfering in the free market by keeping wages and prices artificially low? I certainly do. And so, yes, I understand the prices would go up, but the prices would go up to what the actual free market economy would have determined it to be before the government stepped in with labor subsidies through welfare programs. And if we controlled our borders, we would be able to better have a free market by not trying to artificially flood the labor market beyond the available job in order to keep wages down. But another myth that the Democrats will try and come up with is that we can't find qualified Americans for this job. Really? So you're saying all these people coming from south of the border are better educated and better skilled than American workers? First off, that's an indictment on the public education system, to which the Democrats just claim we just need to throw more money, and yet we spend more money per child than pretty much any other country. And yet you're saying that these other countries produce better, more skilled workers than the United States? And yet they spend less money per child. So maybe there is a bit of a problem there, but there's also the issue here that, you know, some of these people coming across the border illegally are not filling minimum wage jobs. They're not doing hard manual labor jobs. A lot of them are doing middle-class office jobs. And you go off and you take a look at that. Now, when it comes to you can't find qualified Americans, therefore we need to import workers overseas, even though we have a lot of Americans looking for jobs, unable to get jobs. Well, it has been my experience here that people are capable of learning, that you give them a job, which basically only involves a few basic functions when you think about it, and then you repeat those functions over and over and over and over and over again, that most people can figure out how to do a job pretty good with just a little bit of training. And there's a lot of jobs out there that are saying that they require a college education, a college degree, and there is absolutely nothing in that job that warrants needing to go tens of thousands of dollars into debt in order to get a college degree. And then, of course, the jobs, even though they pay more than minimum wage, they do not pay enough to be able to cover paying back the loans that were taken out and needed, even if the loans were just set at just tuition and they worked while they were going to school in order to pay for housing, transportation, utilities, and groceries, that even at there, a lot of these jobs do not pay enough for people to be able to pay back the loans that they took out. And then they have to end up getting on payment plan for less than what their payments normally would be. So you want a college degree for a job that doesn't require a college degree, and then you don't want to pay for it. But when they go off and say that they can't find anybody qualified to fill those jobs, and therefore we need more immigration, then the truth of the matter is not that they can't find anybody qualified, or even if they can't find anybody qualified, that still does not justify illegal immigration, because with illegal immigrants or with immigration in general, what you are saying is, if you bring people in from other countries and we'll go ahead and take them in, we'll train them, even though they may not have any experience or actual qualifications, but we'll go through and we'll actually train them. And then when they're done with their training, we'll give them a wage, but the wage will still be less than what an American worker would have been paid. All you're saying here is you're more willing to train foreign nationals to do a job for you, but you're not willing to provide the same training to American citizens looking for jobs, all because you're trying to save a few dollars. However, if you were to completely curb illegal immigration, right? Let's completely curb that. And then you would set that regular immigration could not happen until the unemployment rate is zero. All right? If you set that up, then all of a sudden, all these Americans that they are saying are unqualified for a position, would end up getting a job, and the companies would train them, you know, for what? 2 weeks, 4 weeks, maybe 6 weeks, depending on the complexity of the job. We'll spend 6 weeks training them, and they would be able to do the job, do it competently, and do it exactly the way it's needed, just like everybody else. You could achieve 0% unemployment in the United States. All you have to do is make sure that the companies have no choice but to train Americans to fill positions, and only when there is zero unemployment do we bring in other people from other countries. That right there is how you solve unemployment. And as the labor supply starts drying up and people are getting the jobs, guess what happens? Wages start to go up as companies have to compete for labor. But so long as labor is having to compete for jobs, wages will always stay low. And that is what our immigration policy is about. It's about keeping the labor market flooded so people are competing for jobs rather than employers competing for labor. And that's why we have seen over the last, 20, 30 years, almost no gain in wages, almost no increase after inflation. I mean, yeah, people get their annual raise, and their annual raise is basically what was inflation. And then that was it. So in terms of purchasing power, there has been no increase in purchasing power of wages after inflation. Except for during the Trump era. You know, while Trump was in office during the first 3 years, he created such an economic boom that wages were actually going up faster than inflation. And people were finally, for the first time, getting lifted out of policy. And the unemployment rate was getting close to the point where we could see zero unemployment on the horizon, and probably would have if it wasn't for the coronavirus, which we are finding out was in fact created in a lab, man-made, artificial, and wouldn't you know it, it turns out that our government had a hand in funding it. Isn't that amazing? Or the NIH, I believe, had a hand in funding it. And yet they tried to claim during the Trump era, oh, that's fake, There is absolutely no way. Whatever Trump said, they took the opposite. And they lied, and Facebook, of course, banned things as misinformation, and what they banned as misinformation turned out to be the truth. Surprise, surprise. The left got everything wrong once again because they just didn't want to accept Trump was right. So now, of course, as we go through and we have dispelled the myth that the Democrats keep pushing in order to justify illegal immigration, and quite frankly, in order to justify bad legal immigration policy as well, we already know what the response is, don't we? We already know exactly how the Democrats would respond listening to this. Unable to process information, unable to come to rational conclusions, and yet unable to find any argument that actually supports their position that we should continue to increase immigration, legal and illegal, to continue to flood the labor market. We know exactly what their response is. Their response is they're just going to shout, "Racist!" Yes, that they have nothing else. They have no ability to think or come to any rational conclusion. So whenever they're confronted with an argument that they can't counter and that they can't find any support for their position, they're just going to go off and mindlessly yell racist at everybody. However, that being said, the Biden-Harris administration think they have a solution to illegal immigration. Well, you know what? The real solution would have been not to repeal Trump's policies, because Trump's policies were effective. They were more humane than what we are seeing at the border now. We have seen videos of people now being in fenced-in areas under bridges because there's no room for them. There is absolutely no humane treatment going on right now under Biden and Harris. We see that the people and kids are back in cages, just like they were under the Obama administration. And yet they want to claim they have the humane policies. And yet under Trump, the facilities weren't crowded. The kids were able to get outside, have TV, Xbox, have their own private room. And now they replace the fenced-in cages with clear plastic wall. They're still in cages, but the Democrats say they have a solution. Harris announced business investments in Central America as part of migrant strategy. Now, this is from Fox News Politics. Harris and the Biden administration have been emphasizing the root cause of the crisis at the border. And yet, as I read that statement, I very much doubt they're getting to the root cause of it, because they have no interest in the root cause of it, because they are the root cause of the problem, because they are just basically providing open borders. But that goes on to emphasizing the root cause of the crisis at the border, such as violence, poverty, and climate in Central America. Oh yes, climate change. Oh yes, the one thing that they have been claiming, you know, climate change, man-made climate change. They have been claiming man-made climate change for about 120 years, and they have been wrong on every prediction that has ever been made. And they always make their predictions on 10 and 15 years, and they've been wrong every time, which is why now they go off and they give a 100-year prediction. That way, you're not around to find out that they were wrong yet again. And we could talk a whole lot about their experts. Me, personally, before I call someone an expert, I would like them to be right at least once. Now, if a broken clock is infinitely more accurate than your so-called experts, you need new experts. But in any event, they go off, and now critics have instead pointed to the rollback of Trump-era border protection that they say have incentivized the migrant flow. Yes, turns out if you incentivize illegal immigration, you get illegal immigration. Anyways, as part of the root cause strategy, the White House says 12 companies and organizations, including MasterCard, Microsoft, Nespresso, and the World Economic Forum, have announced commitment to support inclusive economic development in the Northern Triangle countries of Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras. Now, what is inclusive economic development? You know, these aren't very racially diverse countries, so I'm not sure what they're talking about as far as inclusive economic development. You know, if they're trying to use it in the same way they try to use it here in the United States. But economic development. Now, the White House says the strategy will involve significant commitment from the U.S. government, or of U.S. government resources. So let me get this straight. You got a lot of people right now who are unemployed. You got a lot of people who are working on minimum wage, requiring welfare in order to make up the difference between what they're getting paid and what the minimum standard of living costs. We got a lot of homeless people in the United States. Of course, they're located in Democrat-controlled areas. Go figure, right? But we have a lot of homeless people in the United States. We see reports consistently about children suffering from food insecurity in the United States. If these companies have so much extra money to invest in economic development and job creation, shouldn't they put that money to work right here in the United States so that those people who want a job can get a job, that there's enough jobs for the people here? I mean, apparently they say they have enough cash to burn. Shouldn't we be investing in economic development here so that we can address the homeless crisis, so that people can get jobs and then afford a place to live? Or hey, if we're talking about food insecurity of children in the United States, doesn't that mean we need to invest more in economic development and job creation here in the United States? The rational, logical person would think so. But no, no, no. These companies, these 12 organizations, have a lot of extra cash to burn and decide that they're going to invest that in creating jobs south of the border in another country before they address creating more jobs here in the United States for those who are still unable to find a job, those who are homeless, or in rising up wages for those who are living in poverty on a government assistance or children with food insecurity. One would think that you would first decide to try and solve the problems in your home country before you try to solve the problems in another country. After all, how can we say that we can help solve their problems if we don't first address the problems here at home? But once again, Democrat politicians and all of these woke companies have made it very clear that if you're an American citizen, their allegiance is not to you. Their commitment is not to you. See, when we go to the voting booth, we think we're voting for who we want in this democracy to be our elected representatives. But yet the politicians, once they're in office, think that their job is not to represent you, but to represent other countries throughout the world. And that is just wrong. And that is part of why things in the United States don't get solved, because the politicians are ignoring them, prioritizing fixing up other countries before they fix our own. It is absolutely insane. And now they also want to send more government resources into economic development. We are nearly $30 trillion in debt. You understand that. Maybe we've already crossed the $30 trillion in debt mark already. I haven't taken a look at the latest on the debt counter here. But we are $30 trillion in debt, which means we can't even afford what we are doing now. So why is it that we are going further and further in debt in order to send money and give money to other countries? Shouldn't we be working on our own finances, you know, getting our spending under control, engaging in economic development here, trying to fix the problems we have here? I mean, let me put it to you this way. Let's say we were to read a story and it was about a couple that decided to give away everything they had, decided to take out credit cards and loans and go deeply into debt, bankrupt themselves. But they did so that they could feed starving children on the other side of the world. Would you celebrate that? Some people would. Now, if you said that while they were doing that, their own kids were left hungry and starving in the basement, would you still celebrate that action? No, but yet, when we apply it on the national level with government spending, we celebrate it and think, hey, we're so good. Do you understand that at the rate we are spending money and giving money away to other countries and taking out debt to finance that, that we are pushing ourselves to the point of no return? In fact, maybe we've already hit the point of no return. Maybe there is no point in trying to engage in good fiscal policy because we're already screwed. They know that. They're just trying to manage the decline and hoping that they can last long enough to retire and die of old age before the chickens come home to roost, knowing that when it all comes collapsing down, the first thing that's going to happen is people are going to charge the Capitol and hang these people for engaging in such horrible, reckless, stupid butt decisions that destroyed the greatest nation on God's green earth. But while we go through, we take a look at the United States. They always say, we don't have enough resources. You know, the government doesn't have enough money. These businesses, you know, they don't have the ability to go off and invest extra money into helping to provide jobs for those people who are looking for jobs. But ask them to help out another country, all of a sudden they come up with billions and billions of dollars in order to do so. Amazing. They never have enough money to help out their fellow American citizens, but they always have enough money to send overseas to other people to try and fix their problem. But I guess, what did we expect? What did we expect when the Democrats seized power? When they seized power on an America Last strategy? Did we expect that they were bluffing about being an American Last agenda? No, they're honest. They couldn't care less. They see here, and this is what you got to understand, they see America as somehow fundamentally evil. And a lot of that has to do with ideological subversion that has taken place over the decades. But they have come through and they have this idea that America is evil. It's fundamentally evil at its core and it's irredeemable. And therefore, this country must suffer. And that they need to do everything they can to bring about the collapse of the country so that the government collapses and failure, and then they can go off and recreate a new government under their left-wing socialist utopia. That just means big government on top dictating everything to everybody, and you have absolutely no right. But they believe that America is horrible, horrible place, and that it needs to be. And if you think about it, and listening to them, they say it's all systematically racist, whatever that means. You know, that every system, every institution, the Constitution itself is fundamentally racist and white supremacy. So is it any surprise that if all they do is think about the United States as a horrible, evil place, that then they seek to engage in policies that bring America down and try to bankrupt us in order to try and prop up other countries before solving the problems here? It's no surprise. It's absolutely no surprise. That's the America Last strategy. The America Last strategy born out of the idea that America is somehow irredeemably evil and needs to be replaced. Okay, so enough about illegal immigration. And yes, this is one of those horrible transitions because I'm not good at transitions. But we can continue to talk about the total dumpster fire that Biden has created. And I think he created on purpose in order to distract from a lot of other things that he is doing. More specifically, I'm talking about the Biden crime family and Hunter Biden. And I have to make sure that I clarify that, because when we talk about the Democrats, there appears to be a lot of crime families that occupy the Democrat Party. They engage in a lot of criminal activity, and they tend to always get away with it, which is why their criminal activity continues to escalate and escalate. But let's go ahead and talk about the Biden crime family in the Democrat Party. And as we go through and talk about this, remember and ask yourself this. How many times now has the media, the left-wing media, CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, how many times now have they been caught running fake news? How many times have they been caught blatantly lying to the American public with the narratives they spin, the deceptively edited videos where they cut a clip to make it seem like someone said something that was the exact opposite of what they actually said? And of course, how many times when covering a scandal is the story in the media not about the scandal, but the Republicans' pounce, the Republicans' reaction to the Democrats getting caught in a scandal? And how many times have so-called journalists at CNN been caught by Project Veritas on undercover video, admitting and bragging and laughing about how much they lie to the American public, that they openly admit they lie, that they, in their own words, are promoting propaganda specifically in order to try and help the Democrat Party win elected office? How many times? A lot. I can count at least 5 times Project Veritas has caught them. And yet, for some reason, people keep going off and listening in and pretending like they have any credibility. Then we go off and we take a look at the fake fact checkers. How many times have the fake fact checkers come out with a fact check that this is missing context? Well, that's very subjective. Who's determining the context? You could show a 10-minute video and they say it's missing context, not because of anything that was said or in the video or left out of the video, but simply because they don't like the narrative and their fact check on the missing context is just an opinion piece with absolutely no factual evidence to back it up, or their opinion piece on what it was really meant, not what they said, but what they think they really meant. And going along with that, how many times have we seen so-called fact checks against Republicans where they couldn't debunk any of the statements that were made or any of the evidence that was produced, but they labeled it false or mostly false anyways because they're mind readers. And they went off and go, well, while he may have said this, we think they really meant that. And then they go off and try to do a fact check on their made up assumption over what the person really meant to say. And then they use that as justification to label it false. And as they label it false from the fact checkers, along with the media attacking it with narratives that get debunked repeatedly, it gives social media, Facebook and Twitter, an excuse to censor out and block the story by saying they're combating misinformation. You know, whether that's Russian propaganda, misinformation, that they are just trying to protect the community, protect democracy by making sure that false information doesn't spread. And yet the information that they are basically blocking, censoring, is not false, but it turns out to be true. This happens all the time. Not because they're trying to make sure that we have a well-informed republic, but because they are there only to try and help support and protect Democrats and get Democrats elected. And the best way for them to get Democrats elected is to ensure that the public is misinformed or uninformed about what's going on. And it's just like what CNN said when they got caught by Project Veritas on an undercover video, that their sole purpose is to do whatever it takes to get Democrats elected, regardless of whatever the truth is. And all of this brings us back to the Biden crime family and all the news that was breaking out about how Joe Biden, especially during his time as vice president under Obama, was selling his office and influence to the highest bidder and basically using his son as an intermediary between his office and those who were bribing him. And all of this culminated around what was going on with the Ukrainian gas company, Burisma. And just like always, as the scandal was breaking just before the election, the October surprise, the media went out there and tried to say this was Russian disinformation. And they came out with some fact checks. Of course, the fact checkers had no basis for their fact checks and all said, yes, 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 this is false. This is debunked. Russian disinformation, their entire fact check was nothing more than just pointing out that the media is making that claim. And that gave Facebook and Twitter all the justification that they thought they needed in order to block a major news story from one of the oldest outlets, oldest publications in the United States, so that it couldn't get shared on social media, so people were unaware of it. And interviews done with voters after the election revealed that, no, they actually had no idea what was going on. They had no idea about the story because social media and the tech companies censored it out so no one would be able to see it. Only those who were on free speech platforms and listening to conservative stations knew about what was going on. And so if you don't know what happened, let's just briefly recap this. So there was a Ukrainian gas company, Burisma, who was under investigation in their home country by a prosecutor for a lot of their corruptions and dealings. And it was really looking bad for the Ukrainian gas company. Well, Joe Biden at the time was vice president and he was put in charge of dealing with Ukraine and going off and having meetings with them about guaranteed taxpayer loans. Well, during this time, what had happened was that Burisma decided to hire Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, and put him on the board, where they gave him more money than pretty much any other board member. And then Joe Biden, seeing that his son was on the board, and of course Joe Biden was getting his kickback from the deal, goes to Ukraine and he decides he's going to hold up the taxpayer loans under the condition that they either fire the prosecutor looking into Burisma or they wouldn't get their billions of dollars in guaranteed taxpayer loans. And wouldn't you know it? And Joe Biden bragged about this, about how he withheld the funds and a quid pro quo deal to get the prosecutor fired. And of course, they fired the prosecutor, and Joe Biden provided the Ukrainian government billions of dollars in taxpayer guaranteed loans. All right. So it was a pay for play deal where a corporation used Joe Biden's son to put on the board, pay him a lot of money, some of which went to Joe Biden, and he used his office as vice president to squash an investigation into that company. Of course, as this information was breaking, the media attacked it, tried to claim it was Russian disinformation. The fact checkers, who had no facts for their fact checks, decided to come out and say, oh, this is false or missing context, whatever, and social media crushed it. And as we know by now, that Hunter Biden took his laptop in order to get it repaired and never picked it up. Under the policies of that repair shop, by not picking it up, it became their property, and it eventually made its way into the hands of Rudy Giuliani. When Rudy Giuliani made it publicly known that he had Hunter Biden's laptop and his hard drive, and there was a lot of incriminating evidence on it, of course, what ends up happening is the government, you know, the FBI and so on and so forth, open up an investigation into Rudy Giuliani. You know, the same cover-up tactics that they engage in. And they made sure that no information could be released prior to the election, or at least the information would not circulate into public knowledge. I know that is a very brief synopsis of what has happened here. Well, more information has come out now regarding Hunter Biden and how money was funneled through him, or the pay-for-play scheme that had taken place. More evidence that the media does not want you to know, and that social media is working very hard in order to try and crush. So after the 2016 election, when President Trump won and took office, and Biden was out of the White House, held no elected office, and was basically in retirement, what had happened? Well, because Joe Biden no longer had any influence on anything, his son was no longer as valuable as he was previously. And so the board decided that Hunter Biden's pay is a little extravagant. Of course, they kept him on the board because there was always the possibility in hedging their bets that Joe Biden would one day decide to seek elected office again, and maybe more importantly, the presidency. So they needed to hedge their bets and keep Hunter Biden on the board. But just 2 months after Biden had left the White House and the Trump administration took office, the Ukrainian gas company, Burisma, cut Hunter Biden's salary by about 50%. Yes, 50%. He was no longer very valuable, but there was always a chance that he could become valuable again in the future. So they didn't fire him, but they decided, you know, you're getting paid too much. Let's go ahead and cut your salary 50% just 2 months after the administration changed. But of course, they kept him on the board because they knew Joe Biden could always potentially try and run for office again and maybe would become a valuable asset. Well, then, of course, we know what happened. Joe Biden came out of retirement, ran for the office of presidency, and then through the most corrupt election ever witnessed in American history, managed to steal the White House. Yes, we've covered all the election fraud. We've covered the unconstitutional actions that were taken in order to get Biden into the White House, all the election laws that they had to break, but they were able to get Biden back into the White House. Now, while Biden was on the campaign trail, the whole exposure of the pay-to-play scheme was getting too much traction, and Hunter Biden eventually had to resign from the board of this Ukrainian company. And what we had found out, and even through media interviews in which Hunter Biden was just very stupid about it, you know, admitted that he had absolutely no expertise in the Middle East and no expertise in gas or energy sector. And yet he ended up on this board. And while he was there getting paid an extravagant salary in order to be on this board where he had absolutely no responsibility, that Joe Biden was able to use his influence as vice president to squash an investigation. And then just 2 months after leaving the White House, all of a sudden, Hunter Biden's salary is renegotiated to 50% of what it was when Joe Biden was in the White House. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And you know exactly what would happen if this was a story involving Republicans. The media would go off endlessly talking about the corruption, the pay-for-play scheme, you know, the whole shebang. They would be nonstop. But because it's against a Democrat, especially one that has managed to get into office now or who is running for presidency against Donald Trump, Orange Man Bad, they squashed the story, they covered up, they claim it's Russian disinformation. Unbelievable. They get away with this all the time. The Democrat Party is basically a criminal operation, and the media is their lapdog. They're the propagandists there trying to cover up. They're the fixers for the Democrats' criminal operations. They're the fixers there to suppress evidence, to engage in witness tampering and witness suppression, and all of that. And as CNN admits on video, they're there to help the Democrats by lying to the American public and pushing knowingly blatant propaganda in order to get the election results that they want. And it is unbelievable. And of course, where's the outrage? Well, it's kind of hard to get outrage when most people are left still unaware of what had happened because of the censorship, because of the fake news, because the left has taken control of almost all the means of communication and all the access to information, that they control what you see, what you hear for the vast majority of our communication. And so they're able to manipulate people. And Facebook ran a study a long time ago, but that by being able to select what does and doesn't show up in a person's newsfeed, that they can control everything down to a person's mood and outlook on life, their emotional state of mind. Now imagine being able to control all the information, like 1984, the Orwellian society, what they've been able to do and what they have accomplished so far. Unbelievable. Now, of course, there are other things that are going on that I just want to touch on just real briefly, and then I'll end this episode. So the Democrats and the entire left-wing media is freaking out over all the investigations that are now taking place into what happened in November's election. We see that there is a forensic audit going on in Arizona and Maricopa County. We see that in Georgia, there was going to be an investigation and an audit of the mail-in ballot systems. And the left is trying to attack it, saying this is not democracy. Yes, democracy actually involves open and transparency. And if there are any questions or irregularities, to investigate that, to ensure that the election results that we got were actually the legitimate election result based off of how people actually voted. Investigations actually strengthen democracy. And of course, part of the left's narrative is, well, there's already been audits. No, there hasn't been audits. There was never an audit done in the election. You know, they did recount, but they never actually investigated the main complaint during the recounts. The recount, you know, just went off and just recounted. And if there was a discrepancy in the recount, of course, they decided they would go with the original reporting. So the recounts didn't matter. Not only did any discrepancy between the recount and the original count get suppressed as they go off, any discrepancy will go by the original count and claim that to be the result. But a recount didn't do anything about the actual claims that the votes were fraudulent. The votes were from, you know, ineligible voters, you know, dead people, people who didn't live in the state, or that they were just manufactured in bulk printing centers, and that they never inspected the actual ballots to determine whether or not they were legitimate ballots. They just said, you know, the recount without any inspection was in and of itself an audit when it wasn't. They play these games. And now they're freaking out about all of these audits, and especially the forensic audit. And you know what? There is another state that has joined the effort into going through and inspecting and doing an audit on the voting machines and the ballot. So we already have it going on in Arizona and in Georgia. Well, it was set to go on, but now the Democrats have filed their motions challenging the initial ruling by the judge in order to place an injunction on the forensic audit to try and block any inspections of the absentee ballots. What the hell is it that they are hiding? Well, we know exactly what it is they are hiding. Well, now Wisconsin has joined the effort. Wisconsin November 3rd election will be investigated by retired officer, according to the assembly speaker. Now, remember, it's the state legislatures that have sole dominion and authority over the election process and the election laws in their state. And so we see that they are going off and they're now going to go through and investigate the claims of fraud to determine whether or not there was or wasn't fraud. Hey, if they do the investigations and it turns out that, you know, all of these irregularities is just the result of just massive turnout for the election, and that the number of actual fraud in the election was low, hey, fine, whatever. But they still broke all the election laws in order to get the results that they wanted. But if the election results come back, or the forensic audits come back and show that, hey, the level of fraud was to such a degree that it changed the complete outcome of the election, well, then the question is, where do we go from here? And the question is also, where were all of these investigations back in November and December when the fraud was initially being uncovered and reported? Did they go off and actually investigate it? They held a few hearings and then did absolutely nothing about it. So where were these investigations back when they actually had the potential to do something? All right. Now, the other question here is, what is the goal of these forensic audits? Well, that goes off and gives us to the question as, what is the remedies? Let's say these audits come back and they prove everything that we on in the conservative side have said about how fraudulent the election is. And you notice when we go through and we talk about scandals and everything, that the left-wing media, who often claim to be based on facts and reality and objective journalism, are almost always wrong on these issues. And conservatives, you know, the conspiracy theorists, are almost always right. Isn't that amazing? But let's say it comes back, proves everything and anything that we had claimed about how fraudulent the election is. What is the result? Is there a mechanism whereby, hey, these results were fraudulent, Joe Biden is not the legitimate president, and have him removed from the Oval Office? Is there a process for that? Now, of course, the Democrats are already trying to attack the investigations and trying to say that the investigations are there to try and manufacture, you know, fake evidence or to alter the data in order to try and remove Joe Biden from office. And we already know what they're going off and what their line of attack is. But is there even a process by which, if the election is proven fraudulent, for Joe Biden to be removed from the White House and restore President Trump to the White House, if that turned out to be what the actual legitimate result of the election were? I don't know the answer to that. I have no idea what mechanism there is to remove someone from the White House after they've already been inaugurated if it turns out that their entire election was 100% false. Now, of course, we also take a look at this from the standpoint of what these investigations are being built as. And they're not being built as trying to determine, you know, what really happened in the election. Not really. And not about whether or not, you know, we could do anything about Joe Biden's being in the White House if it turns out he's there fraudulently. No. It's not about being able to go back and correct the record and ensure the person in the White House is the legitimate president of the United States. That's not it. They're going off and talking about this about the next election. Hey, you know what? No matter what the results are, no matter how much fraud we find, no matter if we find out that Joe Biden, it was illegitimately installed into the White House, our goal is not to have them removed. Our goal is about the next election. Of course, you know, so this is all being built not to do anything about what happened in November 3rd, but to try and just ensure that the integrity of future elections. Basically, let me put it to you this way. They're saying, no matter how the results come out, we're going to let the Democrats get away with it this time. But just take our word that we're going to take steps and actions in order to ensure that such fraud doesn't happen in the future. So while democracy was completely destroyed in 2020, we're going to ensure that it is fully restored in 2022. Me personally, I would like to ensure that the person in the White House now is the legitimate person. And if an illegitimate person is in the White House right now, that they get removed based off of the facts, data, and evidence. But this always happens to be the case, isn't it? The Democrats do something, they get caught engaging in illegal activity. The Republicans promise to investigate. They do some sort of investigation, and it always results in, we're going to let them get away with it this time, but we promise we're going to do something about it when we're in a position to just make sure they're not able to do and get away with it again. I'm tired of them always getting away with it with only the promise that, you know, they'll be stopped from being able to repeat such actions again in the future. No, I want them to pay the consequences for all their illegal actions and behaviors now. And I'll be honest, this feels a lot like Spygate, where no matter how much evidence gets produced about the illegal activities of the Democrats, they're just going to get away with it. It's just going to end up going down the memory hole. And that is probably one of the most frustrating parts of all of this. All right, so that's it for this particular episode. I'd like to thank you so much for listening in. Thank you so much. Give me a rating, a review, share this around on the free speech platforms. Follow me on Parler, on Gab, on Minds, on MeWe, on Rumble. You know the drill. If you prefer to see if you can get any of my content on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, good luck. But, you know, you're welcome to go ahead and follow me on those platforms as well. And don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already. It just means follow. It doesn't cost anything. Thank you so much for listening in, and I will be back again soon.